Welcome to Ballistic Radio, the fastest growing gun talk show in the country. Join us. We're going to explore the topics of firearms, self-defense, and your rights as a law-abiding citizen. Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Firearms finishes so tough, you need dynamite to take them off. Now, here's your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com. Get the latest behind-the-scenes info at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Co-hosting with me this evening is Matt the Minion. Mr. Minion, how are you?
I'm well. How about you, John?
Not too bad. It'd be a lot better if I could, like, clearly hear in my headphones what's going on in the studio. I don't know. Someone must have broken the jack or my... Both pairs of headphones are dying. I'm not sure which.
Maybe it's your ears or your one ear.
That's not good. Could be that 20,000 rounds in the last couple months through the night's armament. Anyway, just a quick reminder, this segment brought to you by Colt. Colt, the legend continues. We're going to have a great show with Rob Pincus tonight, who is patiently waiting on the phone, and I'm going to pretend I'm more important than I am and make him wait just a minute longer while I discuss some things. So we finished up the Knights Armament test rifle. 20,145 rounds was the final total. Zero cleaning, zero malfunctions. And the last group we shot at 20,085 rounds was 1.1 inch edge-to-edge at 100 yards, five-shot group. Not too shabby. So I posted a video on the Facebook page that I thought was very tongue-in-cheek and wasn't going to upset anyone, just semi-poking fun at an AK. I said, will an AK do this? And apparently, that was the wrong thing to say, because everyone that has ever looked at an AK and liked it is now sending me death threats or something. So, anyway, that's going to be displayed at SHOT Show this year in the Knights Armament booth, so if you're going to the show, you can check it out there. We've already got our next test rifle. I've posted teasers on Instagram and Facebook, but I'm not officially announcing it until two shows from now, I want to say. Not that it's a giant secret, but I'm going to just drag this out a little bit longer. So other than that, I can't think of... Oh, we've got an incredible cold spell that's going to be moving through the area in the next week. So hopefully this week we'll get some videos up about winter firearm access issues if you're a concealed carry dude and or a police officer that carries concealed as part of your job. Should be interesting. And hopefully I won't accidentally put a round into myself trying to deal with five different layers and negative 17 degrees or whatever it's supposed to be. One other thing. I just want to take a moment to point out this is a two-year anniversary of the death of someone that is sorely missed in the industry and was a major innovator, John Noveski, 2 years ago today, died in a car accident. Never got to meet John, never got to talk to him. He was actually a good friend of a friend of mine, as was someone else that died unexpectedly in the firearms industry. Not I want to say that anniversary is coming up in February. Anyway, just if you don't know who John Noveski is, you're doing it wrong. Go look it up. Did a lot of great things. And one of my major disappointments, I never got to talk to him on the show. So anyway, we're thinking of you. Other than that, yeah, I'd probably get Rob on the show now to...
He might like that.
What, if I get him on the show?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
Or we could just keep him.
I can make fun of him with impunity right now. As soon as I get him on the show, he's going to like start arguing and stuff and probably make me look bad. But anyway, joining us tonight, Mr. Rob Pincus. Rob, how are you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you doing?
I can't complain. Well, I could. No one would care, especially you. So I won't do it on there.
I do not care.
Yeah, I know you don't. But that's why we love each other and have such a healthy relationship, is our lack of caring and understanding for one another. So
that's the basis of most good relationships, I think.
Isn't it? Yeah, just ignore each
honesty
other.
Honesty and truth. That's what people ask for. Honesty, truth.
Right, you know. Right. So, and maybe like this time when I introduce myself after having met you for four times, you'll actually remember me at SHOT Show. So that'll be something.
I don't know. That's 2 weeks away. There's a lot of people there. Bring up the show. And
Yeah, I will.
Yeah.
I will, I'm sure. So
that's the problem with radio. If you did video, I would recognize you.
I do video, Rob. Remember, you've been in them with me before.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So
you're welcome.
Oh, thank you so much. This is going to be an awesome show. So for those that don't know, Rob and I are actually friends. Whether or not it sounds like it on the show, well, you'll have to be the judge of that. Though, for people that have been living under a rock for the last, well, I don't know, 19, 20 years in the gun industry, you mind going over your background just real quick, Rob?
Yeah, so actually, we mentioned SHOT Show. This will be my 19th SHOT Show.
I'm sorry.
So I officially decided that, you know, arbitrarily the first attendance at SHOT Show there with some professional purpose was my entry into the industry. Been writing for the magazine since the late 90s, teaching, training since mid-90s, one way or another, the way most people would gauge it. And in 2001, I left law enforcement, left the public sector, and decided to make this my career, you know, full-time thing. And by 2003, teaching and training was paying all the bills. Ran the Valhalla Training Center for a number of years throughout its tenure, the whole time that it existed, and then decided to, as that was winding down, started up ICE Training Company, which has existed since 2008, and our flagship program is Combat Focus Shooting. It's an intuitive defensive pistol program primarily, though we do teach rifle classes, apply the same basic principles to the use of various semi-automatic, lever action, whatever rifles people show up with. And we've got a network of instructors that operate all over the world, primarily obviously in the U.S., teaching the combat focus shooting program. We've got defensive firearms coaches that teach intro to concealed carry tactics and firearm skill development. We do home defense tactics through that program as well. And I'm the executive director of Personal Defense Network, which is a program that started in 2005 as a DVD series. We now have over 80 DVDs in that series with about 7 million copies distributed. And personaldefensenetwork.com is an online version of the DVD series, where we do both full-length videos for our premium members as well as video clips and articles for people that come by for free. And you've had a number of our guests, or sorry, a number of our contributors as guests on your show, Craig Douglas, William April, Chris Fry, probably a whole bunch of other ones. So we've got a great team of contributors over at Personal Defense Network that I'm really proud of as well.
Yeah.
And wrote a few books along the way.
Yeah, I was at Walmart the other day and actually saw one of your books. It was in the sporting goods section. I think I actually texted you a photo of it and said, wow, I can't believe what they're selling in Walmart these days.
I know, it's not all Chinese crap. Go figure.
Wow, I like how you took it that direction. Touché, sir. So,
thank you.
And someone, you know, a mutual friend of ours that I just want to bring up too is Caleb Causey, who is another great individual that you.
Oh yeah, for sure. He's one of our newest contributors over at PDN too.
Right. Which he's got a tactical medicine conference coming up in March that should be cool too. Anyway, free shout out to Caleb. So we got about a minute left in this segment because somebody talked a lot about themselves. No, I'm kidding. So I guess where I want to get started is, for whatever reason, there seems to be a lot of people that are willing to trash someone else or trash someone else's ideas without actually talking about it. And there's not very much friendly discourse in the industry anymore. At least it seems that way to me. It seems like there's a lot of different cliques and it's sort of my kung fu is better than your kung fu. What do you think of that? Or is that a thing?
I definitely agree. There's a lot of cliques. I think, you know, the friendliness is interesting. And I know we don't have much time. In person, I will tell you that I have a lot of friendly banter, a lot of friendly kind of disagreements, whatever they are. What I think is missing is conversation, discourse, classical argument or dialogue comparing, you know, foundational principles or sort of arguing the points, right?
Right.
But what happens, where a lot of the cliques and the fanboy stuff come from, and I think that's where a lot of it comes from, is the internet started a lot of that. You know, when you had the forums, you know, everybody using a code name, and even today on Facebook.
Well, and that's true. I got to interrupt just because we have to go to break. Well,
hold that thought.
When we get back, more with Rob Pincus. Right now, you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Black Fire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Firearms finishes so tough you need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online at blackfireordgroup.com. This segment brought to you by Walther and the new PPX. Walther and the new PPX. Grip it, love it, get it now. So anyway, we are joined by Mr. Rob Pincus. And I apologize to the listeners, too. I've heard several complaints during the break that the audio quality is not as good as we would generally like, but that's, I guess, what happens when you have too much awesome on one show and just things get shorted out. Isn't that right, Rob?
It could be. If it's my fault, I thoroughly apologize. I know you guys normally run a great show. I've listened to it a lot, so it may be on my end. I'm kind of in a snowy Colorado evening here, so maybe my fault.
Nah, it's probably mine. So anyway, we can just spend like the next segment taking blame for something that probably neither one of us had anything to do with. Sorry about that crucifixion, Jesus. I didn't mean that. Oh, sorry. Anyway, wow, religion on the radio. Bad, bad idea. Let's move away from that.
Stop.
Yep.
Abort.
Full stop.
Oh, wait, I shouldn't have said that. Oh.
God.
Wow.
Anyway, moving forward. So we were talking about friendly discourse and whether the minion's going to die. I wish we had
just thinking, we're moving forward, but downhill.
Yeah. I kind of figured this would happen, too. So
You just had a baby, and my wife's pregnant. So obviously,
yes,
we know where we are on that conversation.
Right, exactly. So, and congratulations again, by the way. So
thanks, and same to you.
Thanks. Okay, we've now spent the last 3 minutes not actually talking about anything. So
true story.
Yeah. Tell it again, bro.
So where was I? I was talking about the forums in the 90s and the 2000s, and here we are. I mean, we're in 2015 now, and mm-hmm. I mean, there are people who are leaders in the, you know, would-be leaders in the industry still posting with code names, you know, on Facebook and opining behind the cover of the internet. And then, you know, you show up at a conference, we're talking about friendly discourse, and you show up at a conference, you show up at the SHOT Show or NRA Show or something, and everybody's buddies, everybody's friendly, everybody's like, hey, how you doing? But the lack of real conversation or dialogue, the classical concept of argument, I agree with you, is missing from a lot of the conversations or a lot of the banter that goes on in our community. And that's what leads to, I think, this cliquish behavior, this my kung fu is better than your kung fu. And the reality is this is life and death stuff. And the conversations that happen among professionals are incredibly important. And I applaud you. I think a lot of the people you've had on as guests, a lot of our mutual friends, there is a circle of professionals in the industry who will have that discourse. You don't see a lot of it on the internet. You don't see a lot of it on the radio shows, the videos, and things like that. And, you know, I think you're furthering conversation, which I applaud and I appreciate.
Well, no, you know, it's either that or McDonald's, dude. So I figured I'd further the conversation, you know. It seems so. I mean, and a really good example of this is, you know, you and I are friends, but I know I've made fun of you in the past for, like, little minutiae that you do. And I'm sure that if you actually took the time to notice what I do, you'd do the same thing. So, But we seem to get along with it, and we seem to be cool with each other about it, whereas a lot of the times when, you know, anyone at all is challenged to think about what they do, they're just like, rah. So how do we fix that?
There's a lot of that. You know, I obviously when we're running classes, we have to encourage students to challenge the material. And not, the tradition in our community, unfortunately, really is based on military and law enforcement training models. And the military and law enforcement training model, you're a recruit or you're in basic training or you're at the academy level, you're a peon, you want your job, you either, you know, you belong to the government if you're in the basic training model, and the drill sergeant tells you what to do, and if you ask why, you're punished. Mm-hmm. So in the private sector, unfortunately, because so many people didn't leave the public sector, and actually, you know, and I shouldn't say that, because today there are guys in their 20s who are doing teaching defensive training as a career. The old model was guys would do something else as a career. They would be law enforcement guys or military guys for 20, 30 years, and they'd get out, be presumed to be experts somehow in the training of civilians in personal defense or defensive shooting, and they would get the job. So people would go to this person who had a great, outstanding military career. We should buy this guy drinks, but not necessarily pay him to teach us things that don't apply to us, and that's what was happening. So you get guys who are used to the do as I say, don't ask questions model in the private sector, and this is how we did it in the NOM, or this is how we did it for 20 years at my special unit, or this is how we did it in this fight I was in and it worked for me, so you should try it. You know, and then the private sector version of that is this is how I win competitions. Don't mind that I'm a gifted athlete and I shoot 100,000 rounds a year. You should try it too.
Right.
We get a lot of that kind of stuff. So people aren't used to really explaining or being called upon by their students to be forced to explain why. They merely show what, demonstrate what, tell what, coach what, not necessarily why. So what you end up with is this lack of willingness amongst peers to discuss why in the same way. So that friendly banter, that we get along, all that's great on the surface. But if what I want, and when I started this, when I have students on the range and I tell them, I want them to challenge the material. I don't take it as a personal affront to me that you ask a question about why I'm teaching something, or in some cases, why I'm not teaching something else. And I'll give you an answer, and that answer will be based on physics or physiology or anatomy or empirical evidence from real fights or empirical evidence from the training environment, what works to help people develop skills. You know, after 2 decades in the industry, thousands of classes, thousands of students, hundreds of ranges across the country in Europe and wherever else, there's evidence, right? So presenting that evidence is something I love to do. Like, ask me the why question. I'll give you the evidence. I'll give you my opinion. At the end of that conversation, I don't care really whether or not you agree with me nearly as much as I care about whether or not you understand me. And I think that's where the problem is. If someone's willing to dismiss somebody because their ideas are different, but they really can't explain why that person holds those ideas, I think they're incredibly superficial, naive, and probably shouldn't be in a teaching position. On the other hand, if they can explain, hey, here's why this person teaches that, or here's why that technique or that concept has been taught, and here's why I don't agree with it, that person's a professional, should be listened to, and probably isn't afraid of having those discussions.
Right. Well, and the other thing, too, that seems I've certainly been running into as of late is that for whatever reason, there is such an emotional investment in whatever it is, whether it's a platform or an ideology or method or whatever, that the fact that there are different answers for different people seems to get left out of the conversation too.
It does. And I think that's where the difference between being an armed professional that then starts teaching and a person who's a professional teacher of those who are armed, that's where you really see the separation take place, is can someone explain a concept that is 99% universal and then understand that there are going to be exceptions for unique people, ranges of motion, physical disabilities, circumstances where someone only can afford certain types of gear, is issued certain types of gear, doesn't fit their hand, how do we work around that kind of thing, versus somebody who says, this is how I do it, this is what has worked for me, I am now going to teach you that without any understanding of the fact that it may or may not apply to your context or your human body, or the physics of your firearm you're using, for that matter.
Right, right. And, you know, let me ask you this, too. Have you noticed that there seem to be a lot of people commenting on what someone will teach without actually knowing what they teach? I mean, that's a loaded that's a loaded question, and I'm asking it for a specific reason, but I want to get your answer.
It is true. I think, you know, if you go back, I mean, the forums are out there, right? The internet lasts forever. We warn our kids, be careful what you post on the internet because it's going to show up at your job interview. You know, what you post in high school is going to show up when you're in your 20s looking for a job. And it's the same thing for me. You can go back and look at the posts that I was making in the 90s, the posts that I was, you know, the forums, things that I was saying in the 2000s. There are times when I reacted to people critiquing something from a position of ignorance in a very different way than I do today.
Right.
So when I'm mentoring, when I'm working with some of our younger instructors in our programs, or just talking to peers in the industry today, you know, my advice is if someone's critiquing your stuff, so to speak, and they don't even really know what it is, and you know they don't know what it is, send them a link to an article, send them a link to a video, invite them to a class, like have them try to get them to understand it. Don't even really – there's no point in engaging them if they're speaking from ignorance. Now, in the past, I was more than ready to, you know, point out someone's ignorance and be a little more confrontational about it. But you know, at this point, I have better things to do all day long. But it is a thing. There's no doubt that people will critique from ignorance. And I think if someone's a student, if someone's just, you know, that fanboy, tough guy, 37 on the internet or whatever, I'm not worried about that. It's my problem is when the guys who, again, purport to be teachers and put themselves in a position where they want to have influence in the community really behave the way that we would say the fanboy would. You know, they're like their own fanboy, and that's frustrating.
Yeah. Well, and as someone that, for whatever reason, and I think this is silly, and if you're part of the cult, please leave. You know, as someone that's developing a cult of personality, it's odd to see people react either for or against things that I say, specifically because I've said them. We got about a minute left, and then we'll move into some other realms. I mean, you got a minute to tell people what we should all do to further the movement and further the cause. What would that be?
ask yourself why. Like, why are you doing something? If the answer is it's because somebody else does it well or because somebody told you to do it and your answer doesn't go any further, I'm not saying stop doing it, but you need to go figure out the answers to those questions better than my guru or the team, unit, company that I'm a fanboy of does it. Like, answer the why questions with real objective answers.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's, yeah, it seems to be something that is severely lacking in almost not only our industry, but every industry is the why behind why people do things. And I said why twice in that sentence, and it was very repetitive. Anyway, we got to go to break, Rob. If you want to hold the line just for a minute, when we get back, I kind of like to talk about, I know it's something that's sort of a passion of yours, is safe storage of firearms and maybe some other out-of-the-box ideas about where to place guns. Right now we're talking to Rob Pincus. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Black Fire Ordnance Group, makers of firearms finishes so tough you'd need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online at blackfireordgroup.com. This segment brought to you by TopGunSupply.com. TopGunSupply.com is your web source for fine firearms, parts, and accessories. True product specialists committed to delivering the highest level of customer support to you. They carry top name brands including Ed Brown, Wilson Combat, Les Barrett, Sig Sauer, and many more, as well as premium AR pattern rifles, including Knight's Armament. Whether you are looking to protect yourself, are a first-time gun buyer, or a competitive shooter, TopGunSupply.com can satisfy your firearms needs. TopGunSupply.com, your premier source for SIG parts and accessories. So, we're having an enlightening conversation with Rob Pincus. See, I'm trying to get away from interesting as a word that gets used on the radio so far.
Yeah, but so, you still keep saying
I'm time. All about enlightenment. I would love to think that we're in an enlightenment period in the firearms training industry. You know, the industry is only 40 years old, and like I said, it was founded on inertia, and it's been, you know, just people wanted to train and people had the opportunity to follow in the military law enforcement model. And I think we've really seen an evolution of the way people train in the last 5 to 10 years, and enlightenment's a good word for us.
Yeah. Well, and something that I've found as I've been looking at like older material and just older videos and things of that nature too, which sort of segues into what we're about to talk about, is how much improved safety around firearms has gotten over the last 40 years. You know, when you look at how things were done 40, 50, 60 years ago versus how they're done now, I think that it's a much safer environment to train in and, in general, just be around, you know, with guns.
Yeah, there's no doubt that we are in a much more educated and respectful community in terms of firearms, much more respectful of the power of the firearm and the responsibility that the owners have to keep themselves and others in their environment safe. And the asterisk on that is some people will say, well, 50 years ago, it was no big deal for guns to be around all the time, so people didn't have to be as cautious about safety. Well, the mature response is, yes, you're right. But we have to all now acknowledge that not everyone today has grown up around guns, and we as firearms owners need to be more responsible with our control of them.
Well, not only that, but familiarity and oftentimes will breed contempt. And I know that when, you know, one of my favorite lines that someone will tell me right before they tell me something incredibly stupid is, well, I've been shooting for years.
Or yeah, no doubt.
Yeah. So one of the big things that I think, which thankfully is made is at the forefront of the community, but still doesn't get talked about enough, is how do you store firearms and how to safely store firearms. You want to talk about that for a couple minutes?
Yeah, you know, we talk about the difference between storing and staging. When it comes to defensive firearms, the firearms we intend to use for defense inside of our home, we talk about that as staging the firearm. And then storing is what you do with your hunting rifle that you're only going to use, you know, 4 or 5 times during the fall or winter or whatever. And that gets stored.
Right.
And there's a huge difference in the way you approach that. You talked earlier about the book in Walmart. The book that's in Walmart is a book on armed home defense. And the big section of that is how do we responsibly stage a firearm that we want to be able to have access to as obviously efficiently as possible, with as little time, effort, or energy as possible. Getting the gun in our hand, being ready to defend ourselves or our family inside the home is very important. But that doesn't mean that we're going to leave a loaded gun, you know, on a table in every room necessarily. a lot of people in our community will bristle up at the idea of responsible firearms staging, yeah, because they immediately say, well, you're being, you know, a wuss. You're pandering to the gun control advocates. You're trying to be politically correct. And I fully disagree. I think that responsible storage is something that we should do, and responsible storage isn't something that we should feel like gets in the way of our being prepared to defend ourselves. When it comes to staging a firearm, a quick access safe or the security of the perimeter of our house and controlling access to our house, both can lead to a gun that's very easy to get to and very quickly reached. The other option, of course, is carrying the gun inside the home. Wearing the gun inside the home as a part of your daily life obviously gives you control over it and access to it if you need it for that defensive moment inside the home.
Right. I mean, and that tends to be just what I do, is once the gun goes on in the morning, it stays on until hopefully right before bed. Sometimes I fall asleep with it on because I get tired at the end of the night because I'm getting older. But as far as responsibly staging a go, you mentioned quick access safes. One of the things that sort of made waves, I want to say 2 years ago, or maybe it was last year, I'm losing track of time, once again getting older, was you suggested staging a firearm in a child's room.
It's something that comes up a lot. It was about a year and a half ago at the NRA annual convention. I was speaking, and little did we know there was a reporter recording at least sound bites, if not the whole thing, sitting in the audience. You know, it's hundreds of people standing in there. One of them posted a clip that ended up on Huffington Post, and it was, you know, the headline, of course, was NRA speaker advocates keeping kids in or guns in kids' rooms,
right.
Which is true. Like, if you so, yes, I do. The reason I advocate it is that as a parent, you know, I've obviously got another one coming. My daughter's 19 years old. As someone who's lived with kids in the house for quite a majority of my adult life, I understand that in that moment, the dog's barking, the glass breaks, the alarm's going off, you think there's an intruder in the home, it is both instinctive and intuitive to think that the parent is going to go to protect the child. And if that means going to the child's room because it's the bump in the middle of the night, I'm not going to stop to collect $200 as I pass go. I'm not going to run to some safe. I'm not going to run to wherever I've staged the gun. If I am asleep or if I don't have my gun on, I'm going to go directly to the child because that's what I care about. And that's what we've heard over and over and over again from people who've been in real situations where they've had home invasions or the alarm goes off, they have kids in the house, even when it's a fire or when it's a false alarm. So if I'm going to go to the kid's room, when we talk about fundamental home defense tactics, barricading, you know, remaining where you are because you're already safe is one of the fundamental principles. Well, if the bad guy's not in this room and I can keep the bad guy out, good for me. I'm better off. Call the police, let the police handle it.
Right.
So if I'm going to go to the kid's room anyway, if I can barricade in the kid's room and I do own firearms, why not consider, especially if there are multiple firearms and multiple quick access safes, why not consider hiding one of those safes in the kid's closet so that when I'm in that room and I know the kids are safe and I know there's not a bad guy there, I can close the door, lock the door, open the safe, have the gun in my hand, be on the phone with the police, you know, stage an old cell phone that's off contract that I can still make a 911 call in the closet with the safe. Now I've got my barricade area, my kids are safe behind me. To me, it's common sense.
Well, and something else, and you kind of hit on this as you were talking about that, but I get asked a lot about, you know, moving inside of a house or searching for people in your home. And you know, and once again, I'm repeating what you said, but I want to highlight it for people listening. If you're in your bedroom and someone breaks in, if you don't have a reason to leave your bedroom, like a child, and that's really the only one I can think of, you know, unless maybe a loved one is unaccounted for in the house, but that brings up all sorts of other issues. Stay in your bedroom, right?
Absolutely. For the Defend Yourself book, I had our friend Craig Douglas, you know, give me some. He gave us 10 tips for armed movement inside of your house, and he teaches a great course, Armed Movement Inside of Structures. But be very clear, I don't think I'm misspeaking for Craig, and I know what I'm saying from an ICE training company standpoint. We don't advocate that you try to, quote-unquote, clear your house. I've worked with literally the top teams in the U.S. and, you know, a lot of teams that are in that next tier down in the U.S. full teams of people moving through homes in training environments miss things.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I was on a SWAT team. Like, I get it. Like, the idea that someone's going to, when I see that on the internet, say someone quote unquote clear their house, you know, I roll my eyes. It's oh, child, let me help you understand the world. Hopefully you're not serious. You know, clearing your house isn't a thing you do. You might need to move to make sure that you can safely get to your kids or to your loved one to protect them.
Right.
But make no mistake, you're not clearing your house.
No,
stay safe, stay out of the way. Let the professionals do it. They may screw it up, but at least you're safe in your bedroom.
Right. Well, and, you know, you mentioned our movement and structures, Craig's class. I've taken that. It was one of the most mentally stressful classes I've ever participated in. Another one would be I was at Pat Rogers, EAG Tactical Shoot House, you know, and that's team structure clearing. Mm-hmm. And we both missed a shoot target that, had it been a real guy with a real gun, we both would have been dead. You know, and that's moving through a structure with plates and carbines, which we won't get into the practical aspects of that. But in that environment, that's what we were doing. Trying to move inside of an occupied structure looking for a bad guy, generally bad mojo.
So. Yeah, and that's the dinner party conversation, right? We go to the dinner party, and I'm the gun guy. So someone's going to come up to me and tell me, oh, there was this one time my uncle, you know, left me a gun, and I've got it in the closet, and I heard a bump in the night, and the dog was barking, so I got the gun, and I went outside the house to see what it was all about. And I'm like, you know, depending on how engaged in being thought of as, you know, not a jackass at that dinner party, whether I tell the guy how ridiculous it was, or I just say, oh, that's nice, roll my eyes and get another drink, is like the decision, but there's nothing good there.
Right.
Like the fact that you got lucky, great, good job. You know, but to encourage that action inside of our community is I think, a big faux pas. And like you said, the class that Pat teaches is, for a lot of people, that's an experience, right? It's what I would put into it's a lot closer to the fantasy camp side than it is to the practical skills side. But one thing that's really important that comes from it, as maybe you learned, is the awareness of just how bad an idea it is to try to find the bad guy in your house. And that's a huge takeaway from those kinds of classes.
Yeah, well, and for me, it was mainly, you know, any class that I can go to at this point that challenges me mentally while I have a gun in my hand is kind of what I'm looking for. We got to go to break here, and then I want to, hopefully I'll remember it when we get back to the next segment, ask you about something that you just said. Right now we are talking with Rob Pincus, and you are listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Black Fire Ordnance Group, makers of firearms finishes so tough you need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online at blackfireordgroup.com. This segment brought to you by Boresight Solutions. Boresight Solutions offers high-end custom modification services for hard-use guns. See why industry, law enforcement, and military professionals have chosen to carry Boresight Solutions firearms. Pat Rogers, Craig Douglas, and Kyle Lamb, just to name a few, have entrusted Boresight Solutions with their personal carry guns. When I'm not busy torture testing project guns, I trust my life to a Boresight Solutions pistol. Quality craftsmanship, improved ergonomics, and amazing attention to detail are what you will receive with every custom Boresight Solutions gun. Boresight Solutions, tools to live by. So, we are joined this evening by Rob Pincus. Rob, you mentioned this briefly in the last segment, someone getting it right once, not meaning that it's a good idea, or expanding upon that, just because you've done something 1,000 times doesn't mean you were doing it right. It just means you got lucky. Do you see a lot of tactics and or just skills in general that are sort of based off of information like that?
Two different things. One of the big things that comes up, you know, I've been around for a while, and I get a lot of earlier, especially, not so much anymore, but people will ask, well, why should I go to your class? You'll see a lot of things, you know, why go to that guy's class? He's never shot anybody, right?
Right.
So one of the things that's been in the conversation a lot because of the Missouri situation and then the Eric Gardner situation in New York is, you know, anti-cop talk. And one of the guys who's a leader in the law enforcement training community, Kevin Davis, a good friend of mine from Ohio, he's been really pushing the idea of, wait a minute, do you people have any idea how many times cops pull their guns, point them at people, and don't shoot?
Yeah.
Or in situations where they quote-unquote could shoot but choose not to. Well, I've always held that I'm incredibly proud of the times that I've been in situations where I didn't shoot, where there was gun was involved, when, you know, maybe technically could I have shot somebody and it would have been fine, and, you know, maybe even held as a good thing. And obviously been, you know, I joke occasionally, you know, better for marketing in the private sector. The reality is I'm incredibly proud of those situations where I didn't have to shoot and their situation was resolved in different ways or worked itself out. So when people in law enforcement, especially internally, it's not talked about externally a lot, but in, especially in law enforcement, people who are involved in shootings, there's a lot of shootings that have gone down because of 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 tactical or procedural errors that were made in the first place. That
right.
really gave the officer no option at the moment but to shoot. Now, in people hate Monday morning quarterbacking, but the reality is in the training industry, that's how we learn, that's how we move forward. So we have to identify those times. So the fact that somebody's been in a shooting, to me, means nothing in terms of their credibility as a teacher. And I always encourage people to ask the person who's marketing themselves based on the shooting they were in or how many shootings they've been in, ask them some simple questions. Are you going to teach me exactly what you did in your fight, preferably with video to prove that's exactly what you did in your fight, on the basis that that's how you survived and I should learn it? Are you going to teach me what you trained and practiced prior to your fight, regardless of what you did in your fight, on the basis that that's what prepared you to survive and it should help me? Or are you going to teach me what you now think in retrospect, given all the evidence and the situation, your feelings, emotions, and logic afterwards, based on what you trained, what you experienced, what actually happened, are you now going to teach me your distilled version of what would help me the most? And obviously, I think the last version is the best, but that's going to take critical thought, and that's going to take introspection, and it might also take some self-critique from the person to acknowledge that maybe what they did in their fight wasn't the best thing. So merely having been in a fight is irrelevant to your validity as a defensive firearms instructor, and teaching what you did in your fight may or may not be a brilliant idea, because we all know there's plenty of gunfights that are survived by people who've had zero training who merely improvise and get lucky.
Right.
So I think that's incredibly important for students to think about when they're trying to decipher, you know, in the huge spectrum we have now of firearms instructors that are available to them, is why are people teaching what they teach, and is luck a part of it? Timing, bad timing, or good timing, is that part of what the curriculum is based on?
Yeah, and you know, I'll bring up someone, Paul Gardner, who I've had on the show, was a Marine that was wounded in action, paralyzed from the waist down. One of the interesting things that, and there's that word that I'm trying not to use anymore. One of the things that he said on the show, though, that I found kind of telling was like, yeah, I made a lot of mistakes, and that's why I can't walk anymore, was essentially what he said. And to me, you know, that seems to be the biggest, you know, my biggest red glowing sign that I want to listen to what someone has to say is when the first things out of their mouth is, here's a mistake I made, here's why I shouldn't have done it, and here's maybe some better ways to approach it.
Right. From the person who was the armed professional, and, you know, they're using that as the basis of, okay, I've done all these things, been there, done that, here I am teaching. Teaching from the lessons learned from mistakes is huge, and I think incredibly valuable. And most of the guys that I would consider the most influential in the way I think and teach today who come from that side of the industry, all will have taught from mistakes. They've taught from lessons learned.
Right. So, and something else I wanted to touch on too that you brought up was you were pointing out that there are many times where officers could shoot someone and they don't, and it turns out well. Sometimes that ends up being a negative too. And one of the classic examples that's shown in almost every law enforcement training environment I'm aware of is the Denkheller murder, you know, where he's giving this gentleman commands. And I saw a video once where a guy put a red X down at the bottom of the screen every time that the legal justification for force had been met. And it was really telling. And unfortunately, Officer Denkheller ended up dying. As an aside, his killer is actually going to be executed next week, I want to say, after 17 years. So,
yeah, it's tough. You know, from a training standpoint, on the public sector side, military and law enforcement side, I think it's incredibly important, and this is right up like, you know, Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman's alley, is teaching people not to hesitate. How do we teach people? How do we, you know, quote-unquote condition people to be prepared to pull the trigger to do the job they need to do, to not just hide in the trench and empty their magazine, so to speak, but really intend to hurt the other person who's trying to hurt them so that they can't hurt them and their buddies anymore? How do we teach that? And that's why those red X's show up, is to remind new recruits and those in law enforcement, like, look, you can't afford to hesitate. Don't give this person the benefit of the doubt. on the public sector, on the private sector side, I think it's much more important for us to teach on that should versus could, that the legal justification to shoot somebody, you don't want to be George Zimmerman. Like, just because you have a legal justification to do something or to get involved in something doesn't mean it's necessarily a good idea.
Right.
Later tonight, I'm going to be talking with Mark Walters on Armed American Radio about the quote-unquote Good Samaritan down in Texas, Aaron Craig, who got involved in a situation where he probably saved a woman's life,
yeah.
Jumped out of his car, pointed a gun at somebody, got them to stop beating her, viciously beating her inside the car. He was over top of her, probably weighed twice as much as she did. He got that to stop by being a good Samaritan, and that opens that Pandora's box of should versus could.
Right.
He probably could have shot that guy, and especially in Texas, probably would have been fine, no charges. Maybe there would have been a civil suit, but the physical evidence on what was happening to this woman, the eyewitness statements, he probably would have been fine. But I feel he is infinitely better off because he didn't pull the trigger. He got the situation under control. He used his firearm, his responsibly carried, CHL permit, Texas firearm, and he used his training and his wits to end the violence without firing a shot. And he's infinitely better off today than he would be if he had been dealing with potential criminal and almost inevitable civil issues in the court of law.
Right. Well, and that's the end of the show, which is nice because I was going to bring up S.L. Marshall's study or S.A. Marshall's study and some other things. But we can do a different show about that. And, really boils down to if you can make someone stop without shooting them, that's what you want to do. But anyway, Rob, I appreciate you coming on tonight, man. I very much enjoy having you on the show. So.
Yeah, great conversation as always, and thank you very much. I hope you had a great holiday, and everybody's looking forward to a great 2015. I'll see you at SHOT.
Yeah, definitely, man. Looking forward to it. All right, be safe. So next week, not quite sure who we're going to have on yet because I seem to be getting guests like last minute just because that's how I do things these days. Anyway, I appreciate everyone listening. Make sure you check out past shows, ballisticradio.com, and also the Facebook page, facebook.com/ballisticradio. Everyone be safe. See you next week.